So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to Review Man.
Hulk Hogan is here. Hulk Hogan's here. Hulk Hogan is in the building.
You damn right he is.
Go get him, Hulkster.
You're on whose side is he on?
Go, what are you talking about?
Whose side is he on?
What are you talking about?
Yes, sir.
Get him, Hogan. Go get him, baby.
Come on and get some of this now.
Who's bad now, boys?
Hulk Hogan arrives. Hook.
What is he doing?
Oh, my God.
Is he the third man?
He's the third man.
What the hell is going on here?
Hulk Hogan has betrayed WCW. He is the third man.
Look at this
picture.
Oh, my God.
What the hell is going on?
Oh, my God.
Are you kidding me?
Everything turned. There is a season turn. And there is time to every purpose.
Welcome, everyone, to a very special edition of Review Away. It's myself and Wei Ting, and we wanted to do something, Wei, to celebrate hitting the 1,000 mark on our Facebook group, and we sent the vote out, and everyone seemed to want to hear two more voices, and that's why joining us in studio today is Dan the Mouth Lavransky and Jason Agnew.
Woo! I'm ready.
After a fantastic edition of The Law, where we chatted to Chris Jericho and Marty Jannetty tonight.
It was a great show tonight,
solid
guys.
Calls.
It was awesome. Yeah, that barn burner.
So, first of all, guys, thank you for watching Bash at the Beach 1996, which is what everyone voted for this past week for some reason.
I can't believe that women of wrestling didn't get picked. I have to step up. I really thought when you told me the list, John, that the fans out there would go for women of wrestling.
I don't think enough people know how bad that show was.
I thought we would get the China porno.
It actually
was not.
I know. I didn't want to sit through that.
It actually was not the China porno. It was a movie she appeared in. I thought it was the porno.
Oh, I thought it was One Night in China.
No, apparently she was in a movie called.
That was the one with X-Pac.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I'll say that for 2,000 members.
Her clit looks like a thumb.
Yeah, you've seen it.
I have.
Yeah, I've seen it.
I saw the beginning. They open it up in Tiananmen Square.
Yeah, they do.
In China.
It was creepy. Yeah, it was creepy.
So for whatever reason, we received about 50 votes, and like 42 of them were for Bash at the Beach 96.
There you go.
So that is what we reviewed this past week. So on top of all of the wrestling that Mouth and Jay watched this week, they added 3 more hours to it. And
well, sort of.
The fast-forward button also got utilized.
Oh, come on, man. The Carson City Silver Dollar match, it was worth it for just that alone.
Oh, yeah, that was excellent, I have to say. You're right.
So we will run this down, and Mouth and Jay will offer in their 2 cents, especially for the Silver Dollar match. It's Bash at the Beach 96 from Daytona Beach, Florida at the Ocean Center. Your announcers for tonight, Tony Schiavone, Bobby Heenan, and Dusty Rhodes, who I forgot how terrible he was.
You know what? I wanted to say one thing, because you guys know what I do in my regular job, right? I'm a closed captioner, right? I have to close caption TV shows, and I do all kinds of different things, from kids shows to documentaries to, you know, reality shows. And I don't know if closed captioning, it probably wasn't done back in for this pay-per-view, because the rules weren't as strict as they are now. But, man, I would like to give a huge shout out to whoever had to caption Dusty Rhodes, because I was watching, and this was the first match. In the first match, I'm like, I cannot understand one man, the one thing that this man is saying. Like, it was just unbelievable. And if you were a closed captioner, to be assigned to Dusty would be tough.
But the first match was actually good, because they brought in
the match was good.
The match was good, and they brought in Mike Tenay, who seemed to be the only one who had a fucking clue about anything involving wrestling.
Oh, no. Yeah, no. This example, unfortunately, isn't even as bad as some of them, but this really shows how much WCW just treated the Lucha division like a joke when they came in.
Totally.
Like some of the stuff Heenan said, and I love Heenan, but some of the stuff he said was just ridiculous.
Yeah, Bobby Heenan, we'll get into that later on, but that brings us to our opening match. It's Psicosis against Rey Mysterio, a significantly smaller Rey Mysterio in 1996, who's obviously been training since moving full-time to the U.S.
Blood, sweat, and tears.
Obviously, at this time, Wei, they were trying to get over these cruiserweights, and Bobby Heenan trying to link Psicosis to a pop culture icon compared the hair of Psicosis to that of Peg Bundy.
Oh, yes. And then he would later compare Rey Mysterio, who is from San Diego. He would say that Rey Mysterio, in some places, is known as the original San Diego chicken. You guys catch that? That being said, if you take out Bobby Heenan and Tony Schiavone and Dusty Rhodes and just listen to Mike Tenay, this was actually very well called, yeah. I found. Lots of innovative offense for WCW at the time. We saw a senton by Psychosis off of the top rope to Mysterio on the floor. Schiavone notes, Mysterio is not the biggest guy we've ever seen. In fact, he's one of the smallest. That was Tony Schiavone's contribution to this match. Off the top, we saw Mysterio hit a Hurricane Rana to Psychosis off the apron to the floor, which looked phenomenal. An Otani-style missile dropkick by Mysterio to the back of Psychosis's head, and then a twisting acai moonsault onto the floor. They gave lots of time to these guys.
Yeah.
Bobby Heenan, it seemed, was just trying to get comedy out of this match where possible.
It was ridiculous. Yeah, some of it was ridiculous. The thing I liked about this match is that besides being heavy duty with a lot of the good lucha stuff that you just talked about, they did a lot of grounded mat-based wrestling in this. Like, if the two of them had met in Mexico, I don't think you would have seen as much of the ground-based stuff. And I actually thought that they did a really good job of mixing the two styles together in the match.
And the finish just looked phenomenal, where Psychosis attempted a Splash Mountain from the turnbuckle, but Mysterio counters it into a midair Hurricane Rana for the win. A fantastic finish and a very, very solid start to this pay-per-view.
That was one of the craziest finishes that I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was good.
Executed so well, and I've never seen that ever before.
Yeah, it was really well done.
It's funny because next week, Way, we're reviewing the One Night Stand pay-per-view, and these two have another singles match.
Yeah.
Psychosis, a bit of a downward trend over the next 10 years.
Well, Tanay talks about it, too. He not only calls the moves, calls the techniques of everything very well, but he also goes into the history behind the two rivalries here between the Psychosis and Rey Mysterio.
Yeah, because they had the huge feud in AAA before this, right?
And they went to the same school together.
Yeah.
And, you know, so we'll get to see them 10 years later pretty much next week.
We go backstage, and Gene Okerlund is with Conan,
explains the finish. I know. I thought that was amazing.
He then threatens Ric Flair and says he will cripple one of his managers and says he's going to clothesline Ric Flair's woman and attack that football player in reference to Steve Mongo McMichael, a very engaging interview. And that leads us to a mouse favorite match of the night. It was a
Carson City Silver Dollar match.
Big Bubba, accompanied by Jimmy Hart, taking on John Tenta, our first two statistics of the evening. I was curious the origin of silver dollars, especially their use back in 1996, but apparently this was a dreaded weapon, the dollar.
Yeah, it's been a kind of a classic old school wrestling thing to use the roll of quarters or the silver dollars, but I agree by this point, by, you know, 1996, it's kind of out of date.
Where is Carson City?
California.
Texas. Oh, okay. California, okay.
And what was the story behind this Carson City
match? I think Carson City, wasn't it one of the big towns in the initial rush from the gold rush back in the day? That's what I think.
Then why is it a silver dollar
match?
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, exactly. I don't know.
Well, this feud was started after Big Bubba shaved part of the hair of John Tenta.
Yeah.
And Tenta was wearing black spandex with a blue spandex top and could not look more indie in this match. Schiavone then tries to contrast this match to the opening match, which was
a bit of a stretch.
All these ex-WWF guys that were stars in the 80s that had these great gimmicks in the 80s, they would turn up in WCW as the most generic dudes.
Well, this is the time when they were doing this goofy thing with Tenta where he came in and said, I'm not an earthquake. I'm not a shark. I'm not like all, and kind of put aside all of his old fed gimmicks, and they try, I am just John Tenta, right? But, you know, I agree. And plus, the other thing is with trainer Bubba had been in as Big Bubba before he went to WWE, right?
Mm-hmm. This is probably post Guardian Angel, right?
Yes, it is.
After he was the Guardian Angel, because he ran through tons of gimmicks.
Yeah, this is funny because this has gone back to what he was before he was even in the Fed.
John Tenta doesn't even bother trying to climb. This pole was gigantically large and hung above the ring. He decided to try and unhook the pole from the ring post. I guarantee you Vince Russo has never seen this pay-per-view because he would have an orgasm watching a new ending to a pole match.
It's so funny that you said that, John, because even though it was 96, that's exactly what went through my mind. I'm like, he's not even involved yet, but I'm like, man, this is such a Vince Russo-style match, totally.
Throughout this match, Dusty Rhodes referred to John Tenta as Don and Rogers as Bubber. Heenan then notes that Tenta is getting whipped in the gills by the belt. Schiavone says he doesn't have gills, and Heenan responds, that's right, he's not a fish. And then Schiavone adds, and he's not an avalanche either.
Once again, Big Bubber tried to cut the hair of John Tenta, but was taken away by a low blow. All three announcers note that there's nothing pretty about this match. The finish comes when Jimmy Hart begins to grabs the sock, but then Tenta takes the sock and knocks out Bubba for the win. This match is way longer than it needed to be. Yeah. And they explain after the match that they were fighting over this angle where John Tenta's hair had been cut. They didn't bother to do this during the before the match.
I just feel bad for John Tenta, who I suppose in the course of a week after having his hair cut off the first time, had to walk around in his daily life with this half skullet. It was like it was his skullet. And then half of it was shaved off. Just imagine, like, getting a coffee.
Ridiculous
hair.
Yeah, it was bad. That was definitely, I thought, the worst match of the pay-per-view right there. Yeah.
Gene Okerlund is backstage with Randy Savage, Sting, and Lex Luger, who all look ridiculous as they've decided to wear Sting's face paint. Luger actually cut the best promo of these three. Savage sounded completely out of his mind, and I thought Sting was drunk during this promo. I don't know what he said. That led us to our next gimmick match. It was Diamond Dallas Page against Jim Duggan in a taped fist match for the Lord of the Ring, which was an actual physical ring that you would put on your finger that they were fighting over.
The Battle Bowl Championship ring.
Oh, that's right, from a previous pay-per-view when they had Battle Bowl. That's right. So this was kind of like the Abyss Hulk Hogan with the ring, the Fall of Fame, except it was the Battle Bowl ring.
For some reason.
Well, at least it was in their promotion.
That's true, yes. Know? It wasn't from somewhere
it
else.
It wasn't from WWE.
It wasn't the Hall of Fame ring.
That's right.
Fans started chanting USA at Diamond Dallas Page, which I was puzzled at. They claim that last year at Bash at the Beach, they drew 100,000 people to the beach, and that this year they turned away 10,000 people for this show. Early on, DDP tapes Duggan's feet around the ring post, and this was untaped by Nick Patrick.
So what are the rules of this match?
They didn't really explain it, Way. More just that you could tape your fist, though I've always been of the assumption that bare knuckles would do more damage. Yeah.
But you could tape your fist in any match. You see like a guy like RVD or Samoa Joe, they tape their fists.
That's a good point. I don't know. I don't know what this was for. It was a taped fist match, Way. A little suspension of disbelief.
Duggan's fists weren't even taped.
No, they weren't. They weren't. Yeah, it's typical of this time period, I think. You know what the best part about this match I enjoyed? I don't know if you guys caught this, but when I think it was Hacksaw came out to the ring, the camera angle with the claws, did you guys catch that?
No.
They had a camera, and they had two claws attached to the front of the camera, so it looked like you were watching the perspective of a crab on the beach. No, seriously, go back and watch it. I'm dead serious. From the side, they showed it, and it was all sand, and there was two big crab claws, and it was from the perspective of a crab at the beach.
Duggan looked incredibly old in this match, and then you realize that 14 years later, this man is still working on weekends. Lots of selling and bumping by Diamond Dallas Page for Duggan, who was doing very little in this match. Both climbed back into the ring. DDP kicked the rope into Duggan, and then hit the diamond cutter for the win. Gets the win, and then Duggan immediately gets all of his heat back after the match, beating down Diamond Dallas Page. A real passing of the guard in this
match. He knocks him out with a roll of tape. He uses a roll of tape to knock the guy out.
That's almost as good as a bag of popcorn.
Then we realize that this is going to be a pattern, and between every match, we are going to have Gene Okerlund, as we're backstage this time with Jimmy Hart, who's with the Giant and Kevin Sullivan. The Giant was still playing off the fact that he was the son of Andre the Giant at this point, and says that he is going to make horse stew tonight out of the horsemen. Then we go to the entranceway, and Lee Marshall is with Chris Benoit and Arn Anderson. Arn was wearing the greatest fuchsia-colored shirt I've ever seen a man wear. And Arn, I thought, cut a very good promo on the Mystery Man in the main event and explained that if they win the tag match tonight, that a member of the Horsemen will get a future WCW title shot. Benoit says he's silent but violent, and his delivery sounded a lot like Jacques Rougeau, I thought.
The first thing this guy says is that he's a fart.
Yeah.
Yes.
Just let Arn talk. Benoit should have said nothing.
Yeah, he's always really awkward, and it seems like he's really trying really hard, but it just feels very unnatural for somebody like
I think that's exactly it. He's trying his hardest, but it just doesn't work for him.
That was awkward, almost as awkward as the sign-off saying that he would leave Sullivan for dead.
Yeah.
Then we go...
See, that's one of those things when you watch these old shows, because not only that is seen in a whole new light, but on this pay-per-view in particular, and they do it on every pay-per-view, talking about history in the making. And this show, you kind of... It actually is true. Mm-hmm. Like, I found watching the pay-per-view going this time, I'm like, you know what? For one time, you guys were actually right, you know? It really is. It's always... Which it must be fun for you guys, I guess, listen, watching these shows after the fact, because things take on such a different feeling, you know, in the future.
Yeah, we seem to have a bit of a curse where whatever show we pick, there is a Chris Benoit.
He'll be on next week.
Yes, he is in the next one.
That's right.
Our next matchup, a dog collar match between Public Enemy, both who have died.
A four-man dog collar match.
Yes.
Yeah, they called it a four-man dog collar
double dog collar, yeah.
It was just a tag match. Public Enemy were the first, act to receive pyro on this show. Dusty, I think that this was the match where he coined the term plunder, because Heenan...
He talked all about it.
Heenan was asking what that meant, and Rhodes explained what plunder was.
Yes, he did explain it. That's right.
They explained that tonight, that they had already mentioned earlier in the show that Eric Bischoff was not here tonight and that he never misses a pay-per-view, which is a trend in TNA that he has not kept. He says that if we don't find out tonight, then guaranteed we will know what happens tomorrow night on Nitro.
You know what was killing me about that whole thing with Bischoff? Is the way that the commentators were going, well, if you're out there, Eric Bischoff, could you give us a call? like he's at home watching the pay-per-view instead of being there. Like, Shimani's like, you know, Eric, if you're out there... Give us a call. You know, I was like, that was just killing me. It was so funny.
So the rules of this match, we had Brian Knobbs, who was attached to Johnny Grunge with a dog collar, and then Jerry Sags to Rocco Rock. Immediately, they leave the ring. Knobbs started beating Grunge with a rubber shark, and Dusty Rhodes thought this was so great. Then the whole match was basically shown in a double box.
You know what? I hate those fucking split-screen boxes. They used it later in the pay-per-view, but for this match in particular, like, there were tons of times when it was obvious that you could have been switching back and forth, right? Yeah. Like, I just hate it. It gives you a headache watching it like that.
Yeah, go ahead. Dusty called this the double trouble bash at the beach bubble.
I fucking hated it. Whatever you're going to call it, Dusty, I hated it.
They're very tiny screens. It limits,
you can't see anything.
It limits your screen to basically a quarter of the size, and you just don't know what to focus on, especially in this match where there's really nothing to focus on.
And if you had a smart guy working the switcher, you could have easily gone back and forth. There were a couple of times. The thing that killed me is when it got to the end, it got to one point where everybody was in the same spot and they still left the double screens up. And it's like, they're side by side, they're both the fucking same. I was dying. I'm like, oh, that's WCW technology for you there.
I enjoy how the director of WCW is doing fine. Now is the director of TNA.
Yeah, there you go.
Craig Leathers.
Says a lot.
Probably the stiffest worker in this match was the table that they tried to break into the ring. This thing was not going to break. We saw Sags on the table in the ring. He then yanked Rocco Rock off the top rope. He flipped onto the table, but the table didn't break. Heenan's sole purpose in this match was to provide puns, stating that they know what to bring to the table. These were not even funny at all. This was sour, Bobby Heenan, in his career. The second attempt to break the table occurred, and that still did not break it. Then Knobbs tossed Johnny Grunge over the top rope, held onto the chain as they clotheslined Rock with it, and Sags pinned Rock for the win. This was the perfect example of WCW watching Public Enemy get over with Paul Heyman's booking in ECW and just assume that we'll throw them into plunder matches. And I guess the crowd enjoyed this because it was new, but watching this in 2010, it seemed very tired.
No, I got the impression that whoever was in charge of the tables forgot to pre-cut the tables or whatever, or something. It was not good. It was not a good match.
Gene Okerlund is outside of the Outsiders' locker room, and he says if any of them had the gall to touch him, he would go straight to a lawyer. That was the whole segment. And
I really like Gene in these little vignettes. I mean, it didn't add a whole lot of point, but I thought he was the only guy that you could use to do something like that, where it's just him not talking to anybody, him in front of a camera, and just being very professional, classy, and serious. I don't think you can get that with a lot of guys out there.
No, I absolutely hated it.
Really?
Because
If you, you, down the line, we're going to see a vignette with him, Ric Flair, and woman, mm-hmm. where he is made a
woman's
total
all over
joke,
him.
Where yeah. woman's all over him. So if they're going to use Gene in that role, he has to be one or the other. He can't split his time on the actual pay-per-view. if they're going to do that, then let, I know you're not going to like this, Mouth, but let Lee Marshall do one of the roles and let Gene do the other role.
Tony
you
the
have
Tiger.
One comedy yeah. guy, and you have one serious guy. Thought it would have been much better.
Up next, we've got Dean Malenko against Disco Inferno for the Cruiserweight title. Disco Inferno is the babyface in this match. Inferno refers to Malenko as Mr. Personality, and he is inviting everyone to his disco dance party after he wins the title tonight. This was all Malenko on offense to start. He hit.
Oh, it's crazy. Malenko just beat the shit out of him almost yeah. the whole match.
He hit a brainbuster, which they called a pile driver. Malenko worked over the left leg of Disco. My biggest problem with this match is that Disco Inferno might have been the worst babyface in history to have any sympathy for here selling for Dean Malenko. Schiavone notes the seriousness of Inferno because he's only been touching his hair tonight and not fixing it in front of the audience. Disco makes his comeback with a neck breaker, but Malenko gets his foot on the rope. Then a Texas cloverleaf into a small package by Disco for a two count. And then Malenko came back, hit a double underhook suplex, and then applied the Texas cloverleaf again for the tap out. For me, you had a huge roster of cruiserweights at this time, and I don't know why Disco Inferno was at the front of the line for a pay-per-view match.
And even putting him in the match, the announcer still, like you said, made him look like a jerk. When he did get his one little comeback in the match, they weren't even paying attention on the commentary. They were talking about something else. So to me, I don't know. Yeah, you couldn't get behind the babyface at all.
I thought the whole role of the Horseman on this show as the heels, it was really strange to me because you had them later on fight Kevin Sullivan and the Giant, who to me I don't ever recall them being like, to me they're natural heels, and you have Arn Anderson, Chris Benoit, who you could argue are much better as babyfaces.
Well, they cut the babyface promo earlier and then worked the match as heels,
and then you also had Dean Malenko here, who it is tough to hate the small guy who wrestles excellently, and then, well, Steve, the next match we'll get to.
Yeah. We actually got a jobber match on pay-per-view here, if you had paid $30 for this. Steve McMichael against Joe Gomez.
Okay, now, who is Joe Gomez? You don't know Joe Gomez? I don't know Joe Gomez. I knew everybody else.
I searched him on Wikipedia, and he was basically a job guy in WCW yeah. all the way up to 99, and he did stuff in territories and stuff, but just a very...
Why?
I think his name was Bobby Bold Eagle.
It was a terrible match.
This was actually yeah. Steve McMichael's first ever singles match of his career.
Really?
And it was on pay-per-view.
Wow.
Rhodes referred to McMichael as a fellow Texican. Heenan talks about the unorthodox style of McMichael as a big asset to the Horseman. Schiavone, as I said, he brought up that this is McMichael's third professional wrestling match and first singles bout. I thought Gomez got way too much offense if you're actually pushing McMichael here as something. And McMichael hit a tombstone, got the win after pinning him with his hand. And this would be a good barometer of where Steve McMichael's singles matches would be judged at.
Just a terrible match. It was blah.
This was a Nitro match at best.
I wonder how he got that finisher. Like, how did somebody decide
one
to
of the most
Steve
dangerous
McMichael
finishes for a guy to have?
Tombstone pile driver.
Yeah. If I was giving my neck to a guy, Steve McMichael would be on the
Not
bottom
the
of
one.
The list.
Yeah.
Then we go to the aforementioned segment, Gene Okerlund with Miss Elizabeth, Woman, and Ric Flair. Two more for the statistics. Elizabeth is going to be throwing a big party after the show tonight, and she was fucking terrible here in this segment.
Yeah, she was just brutal. Yeah. This is the reason why she didn't talk
exactly.
all those years in the
exactly.
WWF.
She was limited exactly. to oh yeah when she was proposed to.
Especially as a heel.
Yes, not a good match here. Just let Rick talk.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Woman flirted with Okerlund throughout. Then Flair cut a promo on Savage, who has nothing to do with Flair's match tonight, and finally mentions Conan in the last sentence, yeah. whose U.S. title he is going after in the next match. Very good promo by Ric Flair, but that's about all you can say positive about this. Conan against Ric Flair for the U.S. title. Heenan is not sure if Flair can handle the Mexican and Japanese style of Conan. Conan gets the heat on Flair, who is bumping all over the place
Conan. He was bumping like crazy.
A lot of people, I think, misinterpret Conan. This guy was a gigantic bodybuilder who was a very, very limited worker in his day. And Flair was doing everything to make this match. We saw Conan on the top rope, and Woman shook the ropes and knocked him down. Flair was with the ref as Woman came into the ring and hit Conan with a low blow.
Oh, yeah, right.
I think Woman Strowman had more offense than Conan in this match. We got the Flair flop, and then he was thrown in the turnbuckle for his trademark spot and then gets knocked off the apron to the floor. Flair then attempted a figure four. It was reversed into a roll-up by Conan for a two count. Then we saw a weird spot where Flair threw Conan into the ropes, came back, and Conan applied an abdominal stretch and then turned it into a crucifix pin. The ref was distracted by Elizabeth for, I think, 15 minutes as woman waited on the apron and hit Conan with a spiked heel. And Flair gets his pin, gets the pin with the feet on the ropes. And Ric Flair is your United States champion. So I don't know how over Conan was, but he was less over after this match. He's basically a tool.
That's it.
What the hell is Flair doing with the U.S. title, though? Like, that was weird in itself.
I mean,
he's a heavyweight title guy. He's had it so many times. It was weird to see him that, you know, not early in his career, but being this long ago and going for a U.S. title. It's like they were trying to shift them down. Was he bad politically at this point? In WCW?
I'm not sure. I don't think so.
At this point, I guess Nash and Hall were getting a lot of power booking-wise, because Flair was booking as recently, I think, as like 95.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think he was in a... He was never, it seemed, in a great spot when Hogan and crew came.
No.
Psychosis and Ray may have been the best in-ring moment, but for me, this next segment was my favorite out-of-the-ring moment of the whole pay-per-view. We have Okerlund outside of the outsider's locker room, and he states that the third man's voice can be heard, and it sounds familiar, but it's muffled and hard to make out.
Shivani, sounds familiar.
Shivani will not take this answer and keeps pressing Okerlund over who the third man is, and Okerlund says... The voice is muffled, but it registers with the subconscious.
Yeah, no, that was unbelievable.
Hulk Hogan has a very, very distinct voice, and he uses one word very consistently.
Yeah.
Anyway,
you know what this promo made me think of with the way that Gene acted? All I could think of was Sting. All I could think of was like the Black Scorpion. I always go back to the Black Scorpion when they talk about strange voices and muffled voices. But yeah, what a ridiculous thing to say when you've got Hulk Hogan back there with the most distinctive voice of all time.
I also noted at this point that this entire show, every single break, they're bringing up who is the third man. Is the third man going to be here? And it took me back to December of 2009 of building a whole show about Hulk Hogan appearing and what would happen if he did not show up for this big angle.
Yep.
I apologize. We then go to our semi-main event with our WCW heavyweight champion, the Giant, teaming with Kevin Sullivan against Arn Anderson and Chris Benoit. The Giant and Sullivan attack the Horsemen right during their entranceway. And then the Giant is taken down during this entrance, and it's just the Horsemen with Kevin Sullivan, but then quickly the Giant returns. I had no clue who the heels were in this match. Yeah. I think all four were heels at the time, but then the Giant and Sullivan were working as the heels in this match, and Anderson and Benoit were the baby faces. They got a lot of heat on Sullivan, who built to a hot tag and got a pop when they finally did make the tag. Anderson and Giant were in the ring as Sullivan and Benoit wrestled onto the announcer's area, which was set up all the way at the back. If you remember, for WCW broadcasts, they were actually never actually facing the ring during their time. The Giant hits a chokeslam right away and gets the win, pinning Arn Anderson. So this whole match was built up to a Horseman getting a title shot, which is not going to happen now. Benoit dives off the announce area onto Sullivan as both land in the beach area on the sand. Then they're back in the ring. Benoit hits a back suplex off the top rope onto Sullivan. And then woman comes out yelling at Benoit, saying that Benoit's going to hurt Kevin Sullivan. And the Giant then made the save. This was just a very, very weird segment, and I don't know what it built to.
And it had more of that annoying split screen bullshit.
The finish took
too.
Place in the split screen.
Yeah, it's bad.
And that brings us to the main event, the hostile takeover, everybody.
The one historical moment of this pay-per-view, besides the Silver Dollar
match. The point of the show that you should have fast-forwarded to after the
match. Yes, exactly.
We get the campiest 1986 video.
This was brutal. You know what it was, guys?
It was funny.
It was actually their entrance video. If you looked behind them as they came out, it was their entrance
video.
It was the same thing? The same video played on the monitors behind them. And what they did here is they had no sound ups. It was just music set to their images, and they showed like a 3-minute video.
So terrible.
That was their entrance video. Wow. It was like playing their Titantron vid.
This video had these fake headlines. I don't know if they're fake or were they from like these...
Those were the big newspaper headlines of the day, Wei. New York Times, outsiders invade WCW.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if those kayfabe magazines used to write headlines like that, and they would actually scan these headlines.
Oh,
on this. I don't with think headlines they went to that such much as effort way.
Headlines such as Sting confronts outsider. But my favorite part of this video, they did a pan of security guards clutching their guns. Michael Buffer is then there for his nightly appearance, and
I like how he's actually giving you some of the backstory in his intro.
Well, he states a group of outsiders have threatened the sanctity of WCW.
Yeah, he's like giving you the backstory.
He then mentions that they had a lottery to pick who would represent WCW. If your company was being taken over by these invading forces,
do it by lottery,
would you just pick and have the Disco Inferno on par?
They had a lottery amongst the top six guys, I think.
Okay.
That was her lottery.
Who were the other three?
It was like Hogan.
Well, that would have sucked if
Hogan yeah, Flair. Yeah. Hogan Flair, something like that.
Bobby Heenan compares this to the feeling he had right before they announced the verdict in the O.J. Simpson case.
Yeah. Oh, jeez.
And then Okerlund asks, where is the third man? He gets into the ring to interview Hall and Nash, who came out just the two of them. Hall refers to him as Scheme Gene and says, the third man is here. And Okerlund clarifies, is he in the building? And I'm thinking, a segment ago, you heard his voice register with your subconscious. We know he's in the building because you told us, Gene. So Scott Hall, Kevin Nash against Randy Savage, Lex Luger, and Sting. Four of the five which have wrestled in TNA in the last 6 months. Right off the bat, Luger is knocked into the steel post and is knocked out cold.
Was he hurt or something, or did they just figure he's the
shittiest? I don't care, but this was still one of Luger's top five matches.
Yeah, no, I was surprised. I thought it was really smart, too, but I thought maybe he might was hurt or something.
Part of me thinks that they were trying to lead some people to believe that he
Luger
would be the third,
right,
third
guy.
Well, he was originally supposed to be the third guy, right?
He was rumored for it.
Until Hogan got his nose in there.
I think a number of names were thrown.
I heard that it was Luger and that Hogan got his nose in there and he said, oh, no, I want that spot, brother.
Oh, I heard that same story, but it was Sting's name instead of Luger.
I also heard Bulldog was one of the names.
Is that right, eh?
Davey Boy Smith?
Yeah. He was under contract with WWE at the time.
Maybe I'm thinking further on down the line when they had somebody.
I remember
it
at the time hearing that it was Luger and that Hogan got wind of it. And thought, you know what, that's a way for me to revitalize my career. I want the spot.
I didn't mind it because it at least did tease someone else. Because, I wasn't watching.
I didn't mind it because Luger's terrible. So, I mean, why not take him out?
There's a point in the match where they're taking Luger out. And we see Hall and Nash in the ring. And Schiavone notes out, the outsiders are their names. And they are known as Nash on your left and Hall on your right. In case you weren't familiar with these two. Schiavone suggests that another WCW come out to replace Luger, and I don't know why he brought this up, because to me this just proved the ineptness of WCW. Why wouldn't you send somebody else to replace Luger? Bobby Heenan states, what are we going to do if they win this match? And I started wondering this too. What exactly are the ramifications if they win a tag match with the survival of this company? They made it seem that it's like the Nexus angle. What's going to happen if they lose a single match? Is WCW going to relinquish all their power?
They Thank certainly God. Made it We'd, seem that way. Yes,
yeah, well,
that
we
was
didn't
the
find
idea.
Nash and Hall worked over Sting, who made a brief comeback with a dropkick to the gut of Nash. The announcers, I thought, for their part, did a very good job emphasizing the importance of this match and trying to build to this third man. But this also did take out some of the steam in the match, because you knew this wasn't finishing until this third guy showed up. Sting makes the hot tag to Savage after about 5 minutes of selling, gets a big pop, he goes after Hall and Nash, but is cut off by a low blow by Nash. And then Hogan comes down the entranceway. Heenan is the only one to clue in right away that he's the third guy.
I found that interesting, too. Yeah, Heenan's right on it,
Hogan delivers the leg drop. No pin. The match just ends. And then Okerlund gets in the ring with Hogan, Hall, and Nash. Hogan then says he built the organization up north, made them rich, and then got bigger than that company. He came to WCW for more money and to make movies, calls the fans trash, and twice refers to this group as the New World Organization.
Yeah, that was a bit of a blunt.
So I don't even know if they had picked the New World Order.
I don't think they did it till Arn Anderson did that promo. He did a promo about the New World Order.
Sure, yeah. He does say the New World Order in this promo, though.
He said New World Order of Wrestling at one point. And then Mouth Gene Okerlund ends this by telling him, Go to hell, Hogan.
Yeah.
No, that was Tony Schiavone.
Oh, Schiavone.
Tony Schiavone's famous line.
As I was saying to John before we started, one of my favorite sign-offs in all of wrestling programs, Hulk Hogan, you could just go to hell. That was it. That's how they ended the pay-per-view, yeah. And the ring just filled with junk. Like, the fans, like, yeah. You know, it was a big moment, and it was a turn that nobody would expect from Hogan, right? Like, it really was a huge moment. I remember at the time watching that pay-per-view, it was a big, big deal. And those fans went crazy. Like, that ring was filled with shit by the end.
It provided for a fantastic visual, just filled with garbage. And Hogan took it well. He compared the garbage in the ring to the fans.
Yeah.
And I think Hogan hit a home run with that promo at the end.
It was. At that time, it really was a big deal, and it was the start of the big run for them, for sure. Absolutely.
Could you imagine if they tried this turn in Toronto, or like a place where Hogan is cheered? Do you think that the fans would have reacted the same?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Where were they?
They were in Daytona Beach, Florida.
Daytona Beach, huh?
So I think at that point, like, the fans were, like, tremendously sick of the Hulk Hogan babyface character at this point.
It's like a John Cena thing.
The crowd reacted, I think, tremendously to this on that first night. So, I mean, it started off really solid, and then Hogan, you know, changed up his look completely, and it completely changed this company's fortunes around. So for historical significance, this show, a big success. But it really was, this was a one-angle show with a really hot opening match.
Like many WCW shows at this time, great opening matches, great opening match, not so great main event. Yeah.
So we usually rank these out of 10. I'm going to, just for the significance of this show.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
I'm going to give this a 7, but the in-ring of this show, outside of that opening match, was pretty dreadful.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I personally give it, I mean, to me, I grade these whole shows and my whole viewing experience as a whole, and a lot of this stuff was tough to get to, especially because I knew what was happening at the end, so I give it a 3.5, half your score.
I'll do a 6, and mainly just because of the historical significance of it.
And Mouth, do you have a ranking out of 10?
I would agree with you, a 7.
All right. Well, guys, thanks very much for watching this Bash at the Beach show. Next week, we will be reviewing the 2005 One Night Stand show, and you guys can compare it to Hardcore Justice and see if you prefer One Night Stand or One Last Stand. And, of course, you can join our Facebook group, ReviewAway.com. That's ReviewAWAI.com. And, of course, we'll be back next week with another edition of Review Away and The Law.
So we're going to get to your feedback on Tuesday.
Yes, that's right. We usually do feedback at the end. We have quite a bit this week. We will do that Tuesday for our Raw review.
Mm-hmm. Mouth is leaving, by the way. He's just running out of here. You gotta pee that badly?
Well, it's 3 a.m. now.
Like, he was like doing the pee-pee dance over there as you were finishing up your segue there. He's like standing up. Didn't want to give a number. Was just running out the door.
Well, Jay, we always pick a song to go out with. And since you're one remaining guest here, what would you like to go out with to close this show?
Well, wouldn't it be appropriate if we just went, we should do like Voodoo Child.
Or as Mike Tenay would coin it,
Voodoo Chili.
There we go.
So it's Voodoo, it's a Voodoo Child? It's not Child, it's Voodoo Child. All right, yeah, play that. We can probably still keep talking too, because there's this whole little guitar part that you gotta like, you gotta back it up. Are you gonna put it underneath us? I'm still gonna talk. And eventually it's gonna hit the chorus.
All right,
the opening. Now.
Dusty Rhodes, Gene Okerlund, I don't know. I'm Tony Schiavone. Hulk Hogan, you can go to hell. We're out of here. Straight to hell.